What is up, and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always with my two co-hosts, John Kegley and David Drogemeyer. We're three writers from San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, who have been covering the Chargers for four seasons now, doing our own Facebook live show, Chargers Domination Live, and then this is our second season with the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, well, a lot to get into today. For the news segment to start the show, we're going to be talking about Anthony Lynn's latest press conference that we heard today as we were recording this on Monday. And there was a lot of very questionable things that Anthony Lynn said, especially about the offensive line being good and being pretty good in pass protection and really only faulting them for the running game. And also updates about Russell Okung and much more. And then in the second and third segments, today, we're going to be doing what we always do on Tuesday, getting into what went wrong and then finishing up the show with what went right. The what went wrong portion of it will probably be longer than the what went right portion of it, but there were some positive things in this game, including Drew Tranquil. I liked seeing Drew Tranquil on the field a lot, so we'll wrap the show up with that after we get back into all the dirty stuff that makes us sad. Let's go ahead and get into it. This is your Locked On Chargers lead story. I'm Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer. Head coach Anthony Lynn had a press conference on Monday addressing the media after the Chargers' embarrassing loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday Night Football. And there was a lot of very questionable things that he said in the press conference, David, and a lot of things I'm sure the fans will have issues with. He did touch on Russell Okung as well and the offensive lines. So let's start off with Russell Okung. We still don't know anything yet with him coming back from the pulmonary embolism that has cost him the first 6 weeks of the season and all of training camp. But we did find out that we will know more on Wednesday, David, at least giving us a concrete idea of when we can finally find out about this because it has been so vague and there's been so few updates on the subject.
Clarity. I mean, that's all we've been wanting is just some clarity on the situation. Is Russell Okung any closer to coming back? How is he doing? We just don't know anything. And thankfully on Wednesday, we'll get some clarity on that situation and we'll know exactly, you know, what the roadmap looks like for Russell Okung going forward.
Well, they'll have to make a decision on whether to put him on the active roster when he comes off of that list. So we'll know much more this week than we have, but it's hard to think that the Chargers' record at this point being 2-4 isn't going to play any part of Russell Okung's return. So I think that's something to monitor as well. Another questionable comment from Anthony Lynn is when he was asked about the offensive line, and if he was worried about it, he said, no, we have a good young offensive line. He's not worried because he trusts them. Someone had the nerve to ask him, why aren't you worried? Which is a very fair question. He said, I believe in those young men. So, David, I know that the Steelers only had one sack in the game, but that is not at all showing how much pressure they had on Phillip Rivers. They were getting after him the entire game. It affected their play calling and affected their offense as a whole. What do you think when you see Anthony Lynn saying that he's fine with the offensive line and he thinks they're a good young group?
I think we're watching different tape is what I'm thinking. I mean, how is he possibly looking at this offensive line and truly believe that they're fine in pass protection? I mean, he mentioned that they didn't do a good job in the run game. Obviously, that didn't open up very many holes. But how could you not see that TJ Watt was in Phillip Rivers' face all night? It's clear as day to me. There are all kinds of problems in pass protection. How do you have confidence in this young offensive line? I just don't understand. The only explanation that comes to mind is that we are watching different tape.
It's hard to imagine that he didn't see the same issues that have been really not just in this game, but the entire season plaguing the Chargers offensive line and really just kind of refusing to admit it at this point. And it just goes along with how he's already coached his team, reluctant to make changes. But we did see some changes with Drew Tranquil getting out there for over half the defensive snaps in this game. And Anthony Lynn commented and said that he's playing well and he's earned his time on the field. But the other biggest thing from last weekend's game is the questionable calls on fourth down in the game. The Chargers had a 4th and 6 late in the first half. They were down 21 points. They decide to try to kick a field goal. Chase McLaughlin misses it. At that point, it was questionable to not go for that and try to put 7 points on the board. But the other one was then the fourth quarter when you were down 24 points. It was 4th and 16. He said that it was because they wanted to not have to go for 2 every time the rest of the game, and it made it easier for them to come back in the game. And also said on the 4th and 6 in the first half that they probably punted, which is not what happened at all. But David, what did you think about those decisions that really had a huge impact on the game?
The 4th and 6, you're down 3 touchdowns at this point, and you have absolutely no momentum. Nothing is going right for you, and you're in position to potentially, you know, put a touchdown on the board, or you're in position to continue a promising drive that could lead to a touchdown, which is ultimately what you needed in that situation. A field goal doesn't move the needle at all. You're still pretty much in the same position as you were if you hadn't kicked. And so it was just an awful decision, in my opinion. I was hoping the aggressive Anthony Lynn would come out in that situation, but it definitely did not manifest itself. And the 4th and 16 also, you're down, you know, multiple scores. You're down 24-0 at this point, and a field goal does nothing for you. You have to at least try to go get a touchdown, and the fact that you didn't just doesn't make any sense.
I get what Anthony Lynn is saying about the 2-point conversions. The chances of getting 3 straight 2-point conversions is very slim, but the chances that you're going to get enough possessions in the fourth quarter that you were already in at the time to come back and score 4 times, that's not very likely at all. So I had an issue with that, and I also had an issue with him not really explaining the decision in the first half and saying that they punted. But either way, the Chargers didn't get it done, and the coaching staff has a lot of the blame to share. But we do have 2 more segments to get into, getting into what went wrong and then what went right to wrap up the show. But before we get into that, we have to tell you guys about our favorite car dealership over at Metro Infinity, right off the 210 in Monrovia. Metro Infinity is the only place to go when if you guys need a new car, and they have a brand new multi-million dollar facility that you can check out the amazing selection of new and used cars. They're the only dealer in California that is family owned, and they've been in business for over 25 years. One of my favorite parts about Metro Infinity is that if you don't like coming into the dealership, it's no problem. They will bring your new car to you at home or in your office, and you can complete the whole transaction there. Make sure to mention Locked On, and they will give you another $500 off of any car purchase. They take pride in not being your typical car dealer where it takes hours to buy a car. They don't play games, and they want their customers to have a luxury car buying experience. Trust me, these guys get it. If you're thinking about a new Infiniti or even in the market for any new car, please give them a chance to earn your business. Believe me, you won't regret it. They also have over 50 certified pre-owned Infinitis as well. You can reach them at 626-599-7510 or at metroinfinity.com. And if you guys head down there right now, you can lease a brand new Q50 3.0 luxury loaded with navigation and get an extra $500 off when you mention the Locked On Chargers podcast. All right, guys, time to get into the what went wrong portion of the show. And obviously, when you lose the way the Chargers did, you're going to have a lot to talk about. But John Kegley was at the Steelers game this weekend, so he got to see the crowd full of black and yellow waving the terrible towels, which was pretty embarrassing on national television. So, John, you were at the stadium, and that has to be one of the things that went wrong in this game, is having the ultimate non-home field advantage. What was your experience like?
Honestly, Wade, I didn't actually get to go in the stadium. I was trying really hard to get the ticket to the game. I looked everywhere, asked people. I even stood outside the gate for a while, hoping someone would feel sorry for the lost puppy. But I stood outside that game the whole game, watching the game on my phone, listening to the crowd, and those fans were loud. From the outside, I could hear the defensive chants. I could see the towels through the gate. And Charger fans were leaving the game early in the first and second quarter. Charger fans actually walked out the gate and left. And in the third quarter, there was like 50 Steeler fans outside of the game at the ticket office from the first through the second quarter. And they were all getting tickets and going in during the third quarter. That is embarrassing to our fan base. And the fact that the whole entire parking lot was Steeler fans, and they had their own tailgate set up, they had the Sunday Night Football TV set up outside the parking lot, and it was all these Steeler fans in one group, and the cameras wanted to show the Steeler fans and not the Charger fans that were on the other side. They took over that stadium, and the fans that had season tickets sold their tickets. Yeah, a lot of them are scalpers, but there was Chargers season ticket holders that are fans that sold their tickets because they were more about the money than they were about the team. The Steelers fans weren't like that. They were willing to sell out money to go to that game and see their team. Why can't we do that?
Well, I think that's a big question, right? But we all know what the situation is with the Chargers moving to Los Angeles. I think that's a lot of the reason that the Chargers fans aren't going to the games anymore. And I know when the Chargers were in San Diego, they had some games that looked kind of like that. But when the Chargers were competitive in San Diego, that place got pretty rocking. And it was never the best home field advantage, but you did have at least some home field advantage on most weeks, especially before the last few seasons when the turmoil really started between the city and the team. But speaking about what happened in the game, so many things went wrong for the Chargers. Obviously, going down 14-0 after three drives, turning the ball over on two of your first three possessions is never going to do much for you offensively, especially for an offense that really couldn't afford it. I mean, this was an offense that needed to fix things in the worst way in this game, David, and they didn't do it. So they did not score a point in this game through three quarters, and they didn't score a touchdown for seven straight quarters. So when you're talking about what went wrong in this game, it's hard not to look at the offense that rushed for 32 yards and look at the offense that was only able to score in the fourth quarter. It just, something has to change, David, and that has to be one of the worst things that went wrong on Sunday.
You're absolutely right. It was disgusting. It was embarrassing that you couldn't put points on the board against that defense. The defensive line is great, but there were obvious deficiencies in the secondary. Artie Burns was a guy you could have targeted on multiple occasions. You had some success, but you could have gone there a lot more, and a lot of that had to deal with the fact that they were out-physicaled. The Steelers just punched them in the mouth repeatedly, and also it showed that they were ill-prepared as well. And it just was an absolutely embarrassing performance on both sides. But you obviously got to score points to win. And if you don't even score your first touchdown until the fourth quarter, you're not going to win very many football games. It was a bad, bad performance. Changes needed to have been made yesterday.
Yeah, and it doesn't help when you have Keenan Allen, who, I mean, started off as the best wide receiver in the NFL, and they've been able to take him away. I mean, the last two games, he has four catches for just over 50 yards. I mean, that's not going to get it done. 51 yards and four catches. That was a Keenan Allen half in the first few games of the season, and he's been shut down, and the Steelers did a good job of taking him away. But obviously, that's just the tip of the iceberg as far as the problems go for the Chargers. When looking at what else went wrong, John, we talked about what James Conner, what they had to do against him, and Juju Smith-Schuster. Well, they stopped Juju Smith-Schuster, but they let James Conner go 23 touches for 119 yards and two touchdowns. And for a Chargers defense that basically had to game plan around two players for the most part, I feel like it's pretty embarrassing that you let him do that, and how embarrassing your linebackers were trying to tackle him, and how many times you had a third and four and you let him break two tackles to get a first down. And John, the Chargers had one job. It was stop James Conner, and they still couldn't do it.
No, they couldn't. They couldn't stop anybody in the run game. Really, they couldn't tackle any of them. They couldn't fill a hole. James Conner shot through a lot of those holes and already had 3 yards in most of those runs before he was even touched. And James Conner is the guy that's going to keep his feet moving after you first touch him. So even a 3 yard run that's finally touched turns into a 6 yard run. So 6 yards to carry, move down the field easily. And then he even caught passes out of the backfield and broke tackles. Tavius Brown had one of the most horrible attempts at tackling a running back along the sideline I've ever seen. And that led to the touchdown that James Conner scored. And James Conner also got that rushing touchdown where he went through the hole and people were just wrapped up on him being carried into the end zone. Do we not have this intensity of I'm going to hit you in the mouth and knock you on the floor? You're not going to run all over me? Or is it just, okay, I'm here to collect the paycheck. Let's just fill the spot I'm supposed to and then get ran over and collect the money. We don't have this intensity like, hey, I want to play football. No, it's I got to get my paycheck. The Steelers came in there ready to play. They were going to hit us in the mouth, and we looked like we had just woken up from a nap.
The Chargers didn't look like they were ready to play. And as far as stopping the run goes, I mean, they actually only averaged 3.4 yards per carry, did the Steelers, but they stuck with it. They were willing to take 3 and 4 yards at a time. They were willing to take 1 yard gains for the times where they would get an 8, 9, 10 yard gain. And they stuck with it, something the Chargers have failed to do for the last few weeks. And James Conner only has a 2.6 yards per carry average in this game. So you kind of stopped him with the run, but instead you let Devlin Hodges go 6 for 6 on you in third downs. And that's just unacceptable. I mean, you have a rookie quarterback and you made him comfortable enough. You don't get any sacks in the game. There was no real pressure for a lot of it. And you cannot let that quarterback, the third string quarterback, go 6 for 6 against you on third downs, converting those very third and manageable situations. And unfortunately, the Steelers had those manageable situations all night long. And when you're looking at what else went wrong in this game, David, what else do you have that you want to talk about?
I mean, we touched on it a little bit, but I want to highlight it. It's just a non-existent running game. I mean, Melvin Gordon comes back, and he's been absolutely terrible these last two games. I mean, I'm obviously one of his biggest fans. I'm never shied away from that, but he's come back, and he has no juice. I mean, just looks like he's running kind of stuck in mud. He doesn't have that burst that we're used to seeing from him. So it's not just his fault. The offensive line was not doing anything to open up any holes. They were getting, you know, like John said, punched in the mouth repeatedly. I mean, that's a really good defensive line there. But if that's not working, switch it up, make adjustments. A lot of that has to do with, you know, the coaching staff too. You know, you got to put your players in the best position to succeed, and they did not do that. And obviously it's hard to run the ball when you get down 20 plus points, but that's why you can't let those things happen to begin with. Got to stick with the running game, and they just didn't.
Well, our coaches are pretty conservative, too. If you look at a lot of the play calling, like Anthony Lynn not going for touchdowns on 4th and 6, it's conservative. Most of our game planning for most of that game was throwing behind the line of scrimmage or an easy run up the middle. It was conservative. Our defense, trying to do bend, don't break without many blitzes, it's conservative. When are we going to have this aggressive, like Rex Ryan type of mentality, like we're coming to take you over, not, hey, we're just trying not to lose by a lot, and we're going to keep it close, and maybe we can win the last drive?
They're a scrappy team, you know, coming back, scoring 17 points in the fourth quarter. It's just too little too late. I mean, you showed urgency in the fourth quarter, but you didn't show urgency the rest of the game. And that, to me, is one of the worst parts about this loss. I mean, obviously, you have it in you. I just saw you do it. But the rest of the game, you have a bottled up offense that has no running game and stays very unbalanced and is just having Phillip Rivers throw the ball over the field and turning into hero Phillip Rivers, who has to lead a comeback. And that falls a lot on his shoulders with the two early turnovers. But that's the worst version of this team. And another worst version of this team is the team that has Travis Benjamin on the field. He had a deep post down the field that it looked like he kind of slowed up on, that he might have been able to run under. That goes as a long incompletion. He drops the ball on 3rd and 9. And I don't know if he would have had the first down, but that's not really the point with Travis Benjamin. He also had another ball that could have been a touchdown. It would have been a very tough catch to make, but he didn't even really get close to making it. So Travis Benjamin plays 55% of the snaps in this game, and I still think he has a problem on this offense and is not helping them at all as far as moving the ball down the field like he's supposed to be able to do. But we do have one more segment to get into, talking about what went right. And I know you heard that correctly, what went right, because there was some things that were okay in this game that we at least get to talk about. And we'll get into that right after this. All right, guys, time to get into what went right. And I guess we could probably also name this segment the Hunter Henry segment, because if there's anyone that actually came to play in this game, it was Hunter Henry, who gets 8 catches for 100 yards in his first game back after getting injured in week 1 against the Colts. So he had 4 for 60 in his first game back in action in week 1. And now in this game, he goes 8 for 100 and absolutely explodes and shows the mismatch that he causes in the middle of the field, David. And he just could not be stopped in this game. And it was great to see him back out there, and even better to see him really performing the way that he did, especially with Keenan Allen not really showing up in this game. And you only had, you know, Mike Williams, who had 5 catches for 70 plus yards, but also had 10 targets and dropped a deep ball that he probably should have caught as well. But Hunter Henry, there's nothing bad that you can say about his game in this one. He was the best Chargers offensive player, hands down.
No question about it. It was such a beautiful sight to see Hunter back on the football field. And they got him involved early. I mean, first passing play went to him for 18 yards, and you're like, man, That's such a beautiful sight. Glad to have number 86 out there on the field as another option for Phillip Rivers. And the only thing that, I mean, I might would have liked to have seen just more involved in the middle part of the game. I mean, they kind of just went away from him a little bit, and he was getting open all night. They obviously got him involved late in the game, but I know that they don't want to push him too hard because he just came back, but he was just money all night on third down, getting first downs, obviously getting touchdowns. I mean, he was just a sight for sore eyes.
Well, and the getting touchdowns part is the part that I want to focus on, because scoring in the red zone for the Chargers has been one of their worst assets this season. They've been one of the worst teams in the league on getting touchdowns in the end zone. We've seen touchdowns called back, two fumbles on the 1 yard line, interceptions in the end zone. I mean, you name it, we've seen it from this Chargers team getting deep in opponents' territory and not punching the ball in. And for me, John, that's what I absolutely love to see, was the Chargers offense when it at least got into the red zone. At that point, you have Hunter Henry, you have another target there that Phillip Rivers actually trusts. And he made not only some contested catches in the game where he took some big shots and still held on to it, but that catch that he made in the back of the end zone, getting both of his feet down in that situation, I mean, that's an unguardable play, John, and that's just such a great chess move to have. And it's no coincidence that the Chargers did better once they got down there than they have in weeks past.
Well, I'm going to do a David Drogabire here and use a quote and say, sometimes the best way to beat a perfect defense is with a perfect pass. Perfect pass beats a perfect defense. It's a great quote that I've always heard. And it showed right there that pass to Hunter Henry was right where no one else can get it, only Henry. And it was either going to be touchdown or a catch. And the athletic receiver is going to make that a catch with what Keenan Allen likes to call the toe drags swag. But I don't know if you can really call Hunter Henry the athletic type, just the really powerful, strong tight end. But when he brought that ball down, his feet were just barely in. Like, I had to look at every single angle. And I was questioning whether it was a touchdown or not. And the referees actually switched the call.
Right. Before they went to review. Yeah.
Yeah. And they switched the call on the field. And whichever one they would have stuck with, incomplete or touchdown, it would have stuck. But Hunter Henry did enough to make that the call. And
what can we talk about the little green line in the back of the end zone? What the hell was that all about? There's a one little slightly different shade of green line in the back of the end zone. It's like, hey, is that part of the green part of the end zone? Is that part of the out of bounds mark? I was like, what the hell is that?
That's what happens when they play a soccer game the night before.
Yeah, it was confusing me too. And I kept looking at the line. I kept learning what it was as well. But I want to talk about the last couple offensive drives that were successful. We were throwing the ball down the field and up-tempo. Yeah, the Steelers were playing a little bit off, but that up-tempo down-the-field offense was what works with us, and we never use it. We always try to go like a little 8-yard pass or a behind-the-line-of-scrimmage swing route to the running back. Like, why can't we have that offense we saw that scored 2 touchdowns, an up-tempo down-the-field offense, an attacking, striking offense? I think that's what went right, was those two offensive drives that scored the last 2 touchdowns for us. If we could do that every game, we'd have a better offense. You don't even need to worry about the offensive line, because if you're attacking quick and striking down the field, even if it's 1, 2, 3, heave it 15 yards down the field for a tight end to catch up to it or something, it's a gain of 15 and you're getting a first down and you didn't have any chance of getting sacked.
Yeah, and the thing about this is you can say prevent defense all you want. That's not what the Steelers were doing. The Steelers were not giving them those drives. They made it difficult. Mike Williams has a really tough catch right after the drop where he made a really ridiculous acrobatic catch on not a great throw, but Phillip Rivers plays his best when he's in a rhythm like that. Instead, the Chargers are bogged down and trying to hand the ball off to Melvin Gordon on first and second down right behind the center. Like, that's going to fool anybody. And it just throws the whole offense out of sync. And really, in Chargers games, you can feel that. Like, you see those two drives, you go 2 carries from Melvin Gordon, now it's 3rd and 7. That takes a lot of the breath out of the offense, and it's hard to just force yourself to turn on the switch on 3rd down after you've really just kind of messed up the whole down and distance and what you really wanted to achieve. So I like that as well, but I mean, of course, that would mean Phillip Rivers not taking the play clock down to 3 seconds every drive. I would like to see some more up-tempo work for the Chargers offense, because that's all season where they've been at their best. The other good thing I saw in this game that I wanted to talk about was Drew Tranquil getting on the field. I know this is not a game where you want to spotlight the linebackers for their play, especially with all of the missed tackles, but David, I thought that we saw a lot of good signs seeing at least Drew Tranquil on the field, because right now he is your most athletic linebacker. He is the one that can play the most kind of roles, including playing that Mike linebacker and being more versatile, tackling running backs in the open space primarily, and he should take that job away from Jatavis Brown forevermore. But it was nice to see him play on more than half of the snaps. That at least shows the Chargers are willing to sit Thomas Davis a little bit, who played only 78% of the snaps in this game, as opposed to the 100 that he's been playing basically in all of the other games. So I absolutely loved seeing Drew Tranquil get on the field.
Well, I think that makes all three of us, to be honest with you. I mean, I've always enjoyed watching Drew Tranquil's diagnosing ability. He really reads and reacts really, really fast. And he, you know, just shoots, you know, and he shoots for a tackle. And I love that. You know, that's something the Chargers defense needs more of. He's faster. He can cover tight ends better than most people on the roster. So, yeah, I mean, just get him on the football field more and you're going to see more games and more production like this.
Yeah, and the one other thing I will touch on is I thought that the Chargers coverage, at least from the corners in this game, was actually quietly really good. No wide receiver had more than two catches. I mean, their tackling was shaky at times, but Juju Smith-Schuster goes one catch for 7 yards on 4 targets. You will take that. One was an underthrown ball where he had a double move on Casey Hayward, but that was really the only time that he had broken free from what the Chargers were doing to them. Obviously, you didn't really need it if you're the Steelers offense, because you were just running the ball 30 plus times and throwing it to the running backs out of the backfield. And that's what I would do as well. And the Chargers got a taste of their own medicine, because one of their plays that they love to do, just throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage to the running back, paid off for the other team in this one. But that is going to wrap things up for today's show. Thank you to everyone for continuing to listen to the Locked On Chargers podcast, and to everyone whose first time it was today. I doubt it after that game last weekend, but hey, you never know. We appreciate you guys sticking with us, and we have a couple more voicemails already, post-game voicemails that we're going to get into. So if you guys want to get in on the action, we'll definitely be doing another show on that this week. Make sure to call 323-524-7924. It's like a real phone, but you just wait till the end and leave a voicemail at the end, and every Chargers voicemail gets on the show. I'm still seeing some missed calls on the voicemail line. But if you don't already, follow us on Twitter at LockedOnLAC and like our Facebook page, Locked On Chargers, and also subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast from. You can find the Locked On Chargers podcast there. Well, it's crossover Wednesday tomorrow, so we'll be talking with the host of the Locked On Titans podcast. But until then, guys, take it easy and go Bolts.